Welcome friends, James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. Today is the 29th of May, 2013, and I have a little treat lined up for all of you. I have the audio from a conversation that I had almost 2 months ago now with Daniel Estulin, who is now working for the Spanish language version of RT, RT.com. As some people out there in the audience who speak or know Spanish might already know, Daniel Estulin is the host of a program called Desde la Sombra, and I will stop butchering the Spanish language, of which I know not one lick from here on out. But for those who do speak Spanish, the video of our interview is now up on Spanish language RT, and the interview has been dubbed in Spanish, so people who are familiar with the Spanish tongue can go there and enjoy that to their heart's content. And I'll put the link to that video in the show notes for this interview. But for the rest of you out there, I have the audio of the interview itself, that which was obviously conducted in English. So I have the audio there. I'll play it out here for you so that you guys can hear what the conversation was about. It's about transhumanism, which I think is an exceptionally important topic, so I hope there's some interesting little nuggets in here for all of you, although I will put up the caveat right now and up front that I did make a mistake while I was talking off the cuff during this interview, and I did say Charles Galton. Of course, I meant Francis Galton, but I hope you will forgive that mistake. But other than that, I think there's some interesting information in this interview, so I'd like to share it with you. Once again, the Spanish language video will be linked up in the show notes if you want to go and check that out. So that's it for now, and please enjoy the conversation.
And there's a great video. I don't play video games, but there is one which I'm familiar with, and it's a fabulous one. It's called Deus Ex. It's about One World Order, transhumanism. If you haven't seen it, I'll certainly send you a link. It'll just blow your mind. In this game, you know, it's there's one of the characters says, technological advancements are not the end of the world, but merely a seed for change. How do you understand technological advancements in terms of future for humanity?
Well, I think there's a couple of different ways to understand that, and I think we've been sold, literally sold, on an idea of technological advancement as being an inherently good thing. There are companies like Google and Apple and Microsoft and many others that are trying to sell us the latest gugads and technical gadgets on a daily basis to try to tell us that this is what we need to complete our life. And this is something that a lot of people have literally bought into, and increasingly so in the last few decades as people start to get more and more hardwired into the technology itself. So you can think about just the development of the technology from computers that took up an entire room to computers that could perform a lot of functions on a desktop to computers that will fit in your pocket. And now we're getting to the point where computers are literally things that you can put in glasses and wear on your face, and they'll tell you what's happening in virtual space as well as in real space. And pretty soon, I think the end point of this technology that a lot of people see is that this technology will be miniaturized to the point where it will fit inside of our bodies. And it sounds like science fiction fantasy talking about brain chips and implants and this type of thing. But I think that this is something that has been envisioned and something that's already being worked on to a large extent. And there are already technologies that are starting to literally interface with the human nervous system directly. So we're getting to this point of this sci-fi fantasy. And I don't think people have really thought a lot about the implications of what this is and where this is going and how and if we can put a brake on this process before it starts to literally change what it means to be human. And I think that's ultimately where this is driving us. And there are certain people who are really happy about this and really want to head towards that point where we literally start merging with the machines. And then there's the others who are concerned about it, but the vast majority of people haven't even thought about this yet and are just buying into the technology one piece at a time.
What's the, just a couple of things that you mentioned in your last answer. There's obviously a growing gap between technologically savvy and those who don't know anything about it. And the majority, needless to say, can't even read. And obviously we don't even need to go into how little they know about technology. So how will this growing gap between not only the rich and the poor, but technologically savvy, aware, and who actually are capable and have the money to buy this technology, and the rest of humanity?
Well, and it's such an important question, because this is one of the key questions that never gets asked among the proponents of these technological advances. So there are the people who are advocating for this merging of mankind and machine, and they say it's going to be a utopia, and everyone's going to be better because of it, and we'll all have instant access to the internet through our brain chips, and we'll all be connected through this hive mentality, and it will be so wonderful, and everything will be good, and we will be better human beings. But the question they never ask, and never gets asked in these types of circles, is how does this apply to the whole of humanity? Because in every technological rollout of every technology that has ever existed in all of human society, it has always benefited a few at the top first, before it ever gets introduced to the rest of the public, if it ever gets introduced to the rest of the public. So that right now, of course, we have technologies that are incredible, that are available to the average person in the developed world, but compared to what's available, for example, in the developing world, there's a huge gulf between those technologies. So can you imagine how much bigger that gulf will be, and how much more important that gulf will be when we're talking about technologies that literally start to alter people's minds, their brains, even their genetics, when we start talking about nanotechnology and technology that literally enters your body and starts tampering with your genetic makeup. We're talking about things that are just so far outside of our realm of experience, they're hard to understand, but they're really going to start altering us on a fundamental level, and it's obvious that this technology will only be available, at least at first, to the richest people in society, the people who can afford this. And it's when the people who can afford this have all of that technology and the people who can't afford it don't, there becomes not just a wealth gap that's some sort of nebulous thing, it's a real wealth gap that makes the people who have the technology better human beings, smarter, faster, more capable, and that gives them an even greater advantage and really starts to skew with the whole of human society itself.
James, again, picking up for some of the things you said, hive mind, which is your collective brain, or Jung's collective unconscious, what's wrong with the picture, and what's more so, what happens to individuals, to individual minds, people, the divine spark of reason, when you actually look at this hive mind collective mentality?
Well, it's interesting. I think we're already going through this to a certain extent, and we start to see this with the development of networks like the internet that are starting to alter our perception of society and how we interact with other people in society. So it's already starting to have that effect, but we're going to get to the point where this is technologically boosted by technologies that, as I say, are literally, for example, implanted in people's brain, so you have instant access to the internet and instant communication with anyone in the world, which again, sounds like a wonderful utopian vision, but as you point out, it starts to really fundamentally alter our ways of interfacing with other human beings, and everyone has seen this already in their day-to-day life, where you can't really interact with people on the street anymore, because everyone's got their head in a phone, or is engaged with their technology in some way. Well, in the future, I mean, human interaction is going to become so sparse, so rare, real face-to-face human interaction, that people are fundamentally going to start altering their idea of what it is to network and interface with people in a real social space. And that's just one of the ramifications of this. But as you say, it starts to really erode at our idea of what it is to be a human, what it is to be an individual, what it is to reason for ourselves, to even do things like learning languages. Why learn a language when you can download a language into your auto-translator and you never have to worry about it? Again, all of these things that make things more convenient for us also chip away at our ability to interact and to exist in this world without the technology itself, so that we start to become dependent on the technology that we once created. And I think probably people have seen enough science fiction to know how that type of scenario can go badly.
Exactly. Now, what you're talking about is textbook transhumanism. What is transhumanism, and where did this idea come from?
Transhumanism, the word itself was coined in 1957 by Julian Huxley, and Julian Huxley was the brother of Aldous Huxley, who is the was the author of Brave New World, which is a very famous book about a science fiction dystopia, a future world where everyone is conditioned from birth to accept their place in society, and everyone is basically drugged into acquiescence in a tyrannical system that people don't even realize is a tyranny. And Julian Huxley was Aldous Huxley's brother, and both of those brothers were members of a family that had been ensconced in the British scientific establishment for generations. And their grandfather was T.H. Huxley, who was better known as Darwin's Bulldog. And this all relates back to a philosophy called eugenics that was, or even a scientific discipline that was called eugenics, that was developed by Charles Galton, which was Darwin's cousin, in the late 19th century. And this is the idea that the best thing that humanity can do is to encourage people who are of good breeding to breed with each other, and to discourage people of ill breeding to breed with each other. And people probably better know this as the Nazi master race philosophy that was propounded by the Nazis in Nazi Germany, and ultimately ended up leading to the types of atrocities that we saw the Nazis committing. And again, this is a big history that leads to the point of, in the wake of World War II, the eugenicists, the people who had this idea that there is a certain master race or a certain breed of humans that were better than everyone else, they had been exposed for what they were by the Nazis, so they had to go underground and they had to start changing the names of what they were propounding. So instead of eugenics, they started to look for ways to hide the eugenics philosophy, and one of them is this idea of transhumanism, developed, again, the term was coined by Julian Huxley, who in the founding documents to UNESCO, which was one of the organizations that he headed, he wrote about how eugenics would have to be re-legitimized by using other names and other terms. So this was something that he was consciously working on. He came up with this name of transhumanism, which is the idea of bettering the human race by recourse to technology, which in itself was an older idea that had been around for quite a while. And one of the people who this idea had come from was a guy named J.B.S. Haldane, who is a geneticist who, in his early days, he was a member of the Oxford Eugenics Society. And he was one of the people who influenced Aldous Huxley to write Brave New World. So we see there's a lot of connections here between the people who founded and influenced the eugenics philosophy and the development of this transhumanist idea. And now, moving into our current era, we have a lot of people like Ray Kurzweil and others who are propounding this idea that one day humans will merge with machines and become better entities because of it.
Well, you know, when you have degenerates, you know, breeding to get a better a race, we've seen the result of it with the British royal family. So I think they better stay away from that. If the philosophy underlying these technological advancements is eugenics-based, what is their final goal?
The final goal is really ultimately to propound and to perpetuate a small bloodline, a small group of people at the expense of the rest of the human race. And again, that sounds like a far-fetched idea unless you actually start reading the writings of some of these people. And you can go back to the original writings of people like Galton and others who were in his circle. And you can also branch forward in time to people like Charles Galton Darwin, who was actually the grandson of Charles Darwin, and of course related to Francis Galton, who was Darwin's cousin. It's interesting to note that a lot of these eugenicists are actually physically bloodline related, and they came up with this idea that there are certain bloodlines that are really fit to be rulers of humanity. And in order to really understand what that means and why these people believe this, you have to understand that what we saw in the 19th century, and specifically with these eugenicists, was the beginning of a new system that was meant to replace the old forms of political legitimization. Back hundreds of years ago, or thousands of years ago, people literally worshipped emperors and pharaohs and others as gods on earth, and that morphed into the idea that, for example, kings and queens had just the right to rule over people because of divine authority. And eventually, that started to become debased. And in the, by the 19th century, the idea of some sort of divine authority for political governance was starting to lose favor. So what these people did was come up with a scientific legitimization for why there deserves to be certain people who should rule over other people. And they came up with this idea of eugenics. Basically, their genes make them better rulers of society, and they are in the positions of power and authority that they are in because they are meant to be better rulers. So it was a self-legitimizing philosophy. It, of course, said that people like the 19th century gentlemen British philosophers who came up with eugenics are just, by their very nature, meant to rule over other people. And going forward from that, the ultimate goal of the eugenicists is, in the long run, to have that same group, that same bloodline, those same people, literally ruling over the rest of humanity, and not just in a political sense, or not just in a social sense, but in a technological sense, as this develops into transhumanism. So that although most of the people who espouse transhumanism, most of the people who follow this philosophy, maybe they don't believe it themselves, maybe they don't understand it from this perspective, but I think the people who originated this and who are really driving this forward are the people who really want to rule over the rest of humanity by the technology and the technological upgrades that they believe they're going to get at the expense of the rest of the human species.
James, I just want to read you a paragraph from this Russia 2045 conference. They say, we're facing a choice to fall into a new dark age, into affliction and degradation, or to find a new model for human development and create not simply a new civilization, but a new mankind. What we need is not a new technological revolution, but a new civilizational paradigm, new philosophy and ideology, new ethics, new culture, new psychology, and new metaphysics. We must reset our limits, go beyond ourselves, beyond the earth, and beyond the solar system. And they say, and by ended by saying, new reality and the future man will arise, and man is in capital letters. So my question to you is, what do you think this new man, according to them, will look like?
Well, there's actually been artistic depictions of these in certain publications. Even BBC News actually ran an article once, just a few years ago, about the concept of gene rich and gene poor. So there will be people who will be able to afford these genetic upgrades, and then there will be everybody else. And even in BBC News, they had the actual drawings of what the human species might look like thousands of years from now after these genetic upgrades take place. And you have this image of these giant 7 foot tall, wonderful, physically fit human beings as being the gene rich people, and then you had these squat troll like individuals that were the gene poor people. And this is the idea that thousands of years from now the human species will physically look different depending on whether or not they belong to this master class that gets the technological upgrades, or they're the part of everybody else. But I think we'll start to see this not in thousands of years, but we'll start to see the way this looks within decades, as something like the Russian 2045 idea propounds. This is something that the transhumanists believe is going to take place probably within our lifetimes, and we're going to start to see this in terms of the what will look like clunky upgrades at first. Brain interfaces and things like that will perhaps actually physically interface and can be removed or detached in some way. But eventually this is going to move down to the cellular level, this is going to move into the genetic level, so that the upgrades might not even be visible to the naked eye, or they might not be understandable in that way, but they'll still be actually affecting the body, they'll be affecting people's cognitive abilities, their ability to interface with other people electronically, etc., to interface with the environment around them, because everything that we use will have its own touch screen or sensor device. Basically, computing will start to be a ubiquitous idea. Everything will have its own microchip or processors in it, so it will be able to interface with the microchips and processors that will be in people's body. So everything from the environment to the people themselves is going to look and act and interact radically differently in this environment. And of course, this is, again, being sold as a utopia, but what's being left out are the people who won't have access to this technology.
James, if you look at some of these reports such as the ones I mentioned earlier, Age of Transitions, Russia 2045, Strategic Trends Report, which is a British government's 2007-2036 report on the future technology. These are some of the things that they're saying. You know, talking about visions laid out in these reports include robotics, cybernetics, artificial intelligence, life extension, brain enhancement, brain-to-brain interaction, virtual reality, genetic engineering, teleportation, human-machine interfaces, neuromorphic engineering, and enhanced human capabilities for defense purposes. Really heavy stuff, which most people don't even know how to pronounce. One thing is obvious. I think for the first time in history, the elite feel they have a chance to steal the fire from the gods, as we have seen in that film Prometheus. So my question is, do you think we are finally, or they feel that they finally are the gods now?
I think they feel they are right on the edge of being able to grasp that. And I think that this is what this is ultimately about. And this is, for example, why Aldous Huxley entitled his 1962 speech at Berkeley The Final Revolution, because it was his contention that we are, as a species, as a civilization, as the human species, we're going through a revolution right now that is unlike any other revolution in history, because this one is a final revolution. No other revolution will be possible once there is an elite class that is literally able to control the brains and the machinery of this technologically enhanced subhuman class. And I think that this is ultimately what the way that this technology is going to be implemented and used, which is as a lever of control for the people who actually program and control and implement the technology at the top. And this is a type of godlike control, or what they believe or hope will be a kind of godlike control over themselves and over everyone else in society. And I think, again, this goes back to how this philosophy was founded and the roots that it came from, trying to supplant the old religious order with a new scientific order. And I think they're just replacing one for another and making it almost the same. So that this, again, is about the quest for immortality. It's about the quest for finding spirituality or transcendence within the human body. And they're just taking a technological or scientific route to do it. And it's an age-old quest. It has absolutely haunted and obsessed people for thousands of years. And I believe that they believe they are truly on the cusp of being able to make this happen.
You're talking about performance-enhancing body and brain augmentations. You know, ultimately, if you want people to take these things on, you're going to have to sell it to them somehow that actually this is in their own interests. How do you think they'll be able to do that?
As a matter of fact, I think that will be the easiest part of this whole agenda, because I think people are already starting to buy on to the precursor technologies because they all look so cool, so sexy. It's easy to sell this technology to people just by making it a fad, making it a cool, slick gadget, and dressing it up in a nice package. And people will literally line up around the block to buy it, as we saw with the release of the latest iPhone. It happens time and time again, and I think they have this almost down to an art. So, for example, we're going to see this rolled out with the future implementations of smaller and miniaturized and more useful technologies like the Google Glasses and all of these other things that they're now working on and are starting to roll out. And we can see how people literally don't need to be told to get excited about this. People literally just get excited about these technologies. And it will, if anything, I think it will be harder to convince people why these technologies might be a bad thing and why they might be leading to the destruction of the human species and what it means to be human. That's something that's almost philosophical. It has to be explained to people. You have to put it in its historical context. That is very difficult. But simply showing them a shiny Fondle slab and telling them, hey, this is the next cool thing, and if you don't have it, you're not cool, that's very easy to do. So I don't think it will be difficult at all to get people to buy into this technology.
James, another subject obviously you touched on earlier is the subject of virtual reality. Now, how will these be, these people, the elite, obviously, the technologically advanced groups or powerful organizations will use the virtual reality to basically annul the human species, or the human spirit, or the divine spark of reason?
Well, that's certainly one of the tacks that they can take, and I think it's something that suggested itself. Again, we've seen this a lot in science fiction dystopias, nightmares, where people start to... We already see people who become so engrossed, so absolutely engrossed in video games the way they are now, that they'll literally spend at 20, 24, 30 hours at a time playing them straight, and there are people who literally forget to eat and drink and die of exhaustion from playing these video games. It actually happens now. So can you imagine a decade or two from now when the technology is so much more advanced and people are literally playing in these 3D virtual worlds that are fully interactive, how people will be sorely tempted to become completely immersed in these technologies and in these games and in these distracting types of environments that pretty soon will start to rival, if not surpass, real life in terms of not only their reality but what they can offer people. And I think it would, again, be extremely easy to get a vast amount of people that the elite or the people who are puppeteering this want out of the way, to simply distract them with these types of technologies, which again are going to become so much more realistic in very short order. One of the things about this entire phenomenon is that all of this technology is increasing in terms of how fast the technology is getting smaller, how fast the technology is, how strong the processors are. This entire thing is accelerating so that we can look at the last 10 years of technological development, which rivaled the previous 20, which themselves rivaled the previous 100. And so we can see that this is getting faster and faster, and it's all converging at a point that they call the singularity. And by the time we reach that point, I think it might already be too late for humanity.
You know, one of the questions you asked in your proposed questions, what is the underlying trend behind today's technology, and where is it taking us, and where will we end up through this technology?
Well, the trends are manifold, but one of the trends that we can obviously identify is just in terms of the miniaturization of technology. It keeps getting smaller and smaller. And the implication of that is that, of course, eventually it's going to get down to the cellular level. It's going to be able to literally start to play around with people's biological systems and eventually with their genetic makeup. And that's the type of scenario we've seen many times. Also, the technology is tending towards bringing people together by connecting them through internet technology, for example, that connects people through these types of Twitter and other types of connections that are very ephemeral, that don't represent actual interaction with other human beings. So we've seen, for example, how various phenomenon have arisen on the internet, like trolling and the idea of people saying things and doing things online that they would never say or do in real life, to the point where the younger generations are having harder and harder times actually interacting with other human beings in real human scenarios. And again, that's the type of trend that we can see amplifying from here. So this is something that not just affects our physical bodies or makeup, it also affects our society, and it's going to start shaping and reshaping not just who we are, but the way we relate to other people. And it's almost unfathomable the amount of change that we're likely to see in terms of the human species in the next few decades.
Just a couple more questions. Going back to the hive mind for a second, we're talking about creating a whole new intelligence through symbiotic existence. So my question is, you know, we're at the beginning of the 21st century. When we get to the 22nd, what kind of species are actually going to inhabit the Earth?
That's a very good question. If the transhumanists have their way, it will not be the human species. It will be some sort of either a hybrid type species or perhaps simply a silicone-based computer type species that will actually be the bearers of the human. Seed, I guess, which is, again, it sounds like science fiction, but what the ultimate goal of a lot of these people is to be able to upload their consciousness to the computers, to the machines. and it is their consciousness that they believe is going to live forever. And the physical form of their body doesn't matter that much to them. These are the types of people, again, who have no problem with modifying or taking on any type of technological modification. So why not get rid of this frail, fragile human body altogether, since there's only so much technological upgrading you can do with it? And why not just move completely into the machines? So really, ultimately, the end goal of the people who truly believe they're going to literally merge with the machines is to completely eradicate this biological life altogether in order to perpetuate their life infinitely in the cybersphere. So it really is a question of whether or not there will be any humans left at the end of this process, or whether it will simply be machines interacting with other machines.
James, one last question. According to you, what does the future look like in the next 25 years, over the next one generation?
I think the next generation is going to have to pay the price for all of the neglect that we have given this issue as a society. And by that, I mean all of the types of issues that we have put off in terms of actually looking at and dealing with and coming to some sort of resolution about is going to have to be decided in the next generation. Because again, so many of these technologies are converging within the next few decades. So decisions about what it means to be human and what types of upgrades are upgrades and what types of upgrades are potentially the end of the human species. Why is it important to preserve the human species? In what ways can we preserve what it means to be human? Do we need to do that at all? All of these questions, which sound like airy-fairy philosophical questions, are going to be very real questions that real human beings are going to have to actually confront in the next few decades as these types of technologies actually come into the market and people start making decisions. And as I say, I don't think it's going to be hard to sell a lot of people on these types of technologies, but there will be some sort of conflict, ideological at the very least, and perhaps actually physical, between the types of people who believe that they're going to merge with machines and don't want anyone to get in their way about it, and the people who believe that this is heading in the wrong direction and that humanity should not be going there. And that type of conflict is going to actually start to emerge within the next generation, and it's probably going to be solved one way or another within the next half a century, just given the pace of technological change right now and the fact that we will be at that point of singularity sometime, conceivably within the 21st century.
James, thank you so much for your time and for being on the show with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.